Often applied entomologists feel as though they don't have enough information to be able to construct more detailed sort of mechanistic or process models to help them to make decisions in crop protection. But hopefully today I can show you that if you do have a range of trap catch data or maybe some sample data taken over a sort of fairly wide geographic area, that you can create simple models that actually perform extremely well. So I'm going to describe to you the development of an artificial neural network model to forecast Rapallisiphon pardi abundance based on historical trap catch records and weather data. I'll show you how we compared that model with multiple regression model and how we use jackknifing to validate the models, and then development of a two-stage ensemble model to improve prediction. A little bit more about that later. For those of you that are not familiar with artificial neural networks, very briefly, they are designed to sort of operate like the vertebrate brain, albeit at the level of a cockroach. But basically, they consist of these processing elements that are interconnected in complex ways, and information is shared between these processing elements that are designed to mimic something like a neuron. I suppose you can think about it like a cell in a spreadsheet that gets information from other cells in the spreadsheet and then has some operation, some mathematical operation on them. They are known as universal approximators. Indeed, they actually can capture very complex nonlinear relationships in data. They learn structure and pattern by example. And they're not usually constrained by the normal statistical or our standard statistical approaches, not constrained by the need to conform to some sort of statistical distribution. They're often referred to as statistical modelling techniques, machine learning techniques, or statistical learning techniques, and they do, the programs arise from artificial intelligence. The data we use, the independent variable, of course, was total weekly Rapallisiphon pardi caught in a suction trap over 22 years. We actually developed the model on less data, but we expanded it out over the autumn flight period in Canterbury, New Zealand. Predictive variables, weekly average temperature consisting of 12 weather variables and the total number of aphids caught the previous spring. The weather variables are just the standard sort of variables that you find recorded in any weather station anywhere in the world. Now, when we use these correlative or regression type techniques, we're often tempted to sort of divide the weather data up into sort of artificial units. Certainly we had weather divided up into weekly periods, but often you divide it up into monthly or seasonal periods. Now, that really means nothing to the insect that you're interested in. So what we used is something called a sliding window technique. I gave it a big, long, horrible name many years ago, but didn't realise that in other disciplines people call it sliding window, where you search through your data to identify periods of time that have a strong association for the event or point of interest. And so basically, you pick out these periods that by implication either have a direct or indirect effect on your population, and you use those as predictors. And this, of course, reduces a lot of noise in the data, helps fit the models better, and also is a great data reduction technique. So we were able to identify these little windows that were very predictive. Now, when you're constructing an artificial neural network model, you have to avoid overfitting. Any model can overfit, meaning that it can fit the noise in the data as well. Now, neural networks are very good at this, actually. So the tradition is to partition your data up into three bits. One for training or fitting the model, the second one, the test data to actually identify where you're overfitting, and then you have a validation data set where you can you test your model's ability to predict data that it's never ever seen before, its ability to generalize. And because of that reorganization of the data, you have to actually create several models to optimize or pick the best one, because it's just random which data ends up in each of these sets. For some of you, I need to explain the jackknifing validation. It's a very simple concept. Basically, we left a year's data out of the data set. We fitted the model to the remaining data. In the case of a neural network, we had to train several networks and got predictions for those, but we chose the best model based on this criteria of high R squared and minimum error. Then we use that best model to predict for the year that we left out of the data set, and you do that for each set of yearly data. And in a way, that sort of creates a sort of a semblance of independent data for which you can test your model's ability to generalize to data that it's never seen before. This is our first cut. I haven't shown the full 22 years just to save space, but you can see that in some instances there's pretty good prediction for the neural networks. Here's the observed aphids and the traps, the predicted, and here are the differences. Some large differences, even larger, unfortunately, for the multiple regression. Absolute mean error over the 22 years, 109 aphids for the neural networks, 245 for the multiple regression. We felt we could do better. What we also noticed too was a slight bias where there's over-prediction at low aphid numbers and under-prediction at high aphid numbers. Now any modeller of course also needs to accept that there's always uncertainty in predictions arising from all sorts of things, data imperfections, our imperfect knowledge, as well as imperfect models. So we took the approach, an ensemble approach that weather forecasters worldwide are now using, in recognition that one prediction from your model is only one realization of the real world. And an ensemble basically comprises an aggregation of model predictions. And those predictions are generated in all sorts of ways, and in fact, almost anything goes. You can either manipulate your model or you can manipulate your data. Now, the aggregation can be done either as a simple average, and some people talk about model averaging and boosting and all sorts of terms applied to this in other disciplines. It can be a consensus, it can be a range, and for a large number of predictions you can actually generate a probability distribution that helps you in decision support. Now most people apologise for at least one slide in their presentation. David, you didn't. I'm going to apologise for this one. But basically, it does tell the story. Too much information, but to the left here we have, and we have a slow pointer, we have the jackknifing where we're leaving out a particular year from the data set. We fit our model to the remaining data. In the case of a neural network, we train several models. We choose the best four. Based on these criteria, this is, I forgot to mention, the first stage of the ensemble. The best four, we generate a prediction using those four models, and you can see those predictions plotted against the observed aphids on this graph here. Not all of the predictions are shown. And then we create a linear ensemble by just fitting a regression through the data. Not all of the data, we actually choose, again, the best prediction. Perfect prediction is indicated by that red line. So that is the first stage of the process. The second stage is, now our data went up to 2003 for reasons I won't explain. Let's say we want to predict for 2004. We train our models using all the data up to 2003. We generate a number of models, same sort of process. We pick, say, the best or the top four. We generate predictions using those models, but before we use them, we pass them through our linear ensemble using this equation here, which then adjusts for the under or over prediction. We then generate four separate new predictions, which we then average. Right. And the result is, going through the ensemble process for each year, that means jackknifing each year out of the data, we can see our ANN models do extremely well. Unfortunately, the multiple regression, we couldn't get that to perform as well. There are some reasons for that, but I haven't got time to talk about that. We could perhaps make it perform better. And our conclusions are that the ensemble model improved prediction for the ANN 26%, not so good for the MLR. Leave one out, jackknife validation increases your confidence in the model. We suspect that we'd have to create a separate model for each trap on a widespread basis network in order to cope with local conditions. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time.
Questions? Well, I have one. So what if you had just a couple of years of data?
No.
You need lots of data.
Yes, that's right. You know, the same sort of constraints that you have to fit a statistical model you would have for this procedure. Yeah.
And are you talking about rather just regression? It's just how you're dealing with all the years, and you're taking one out and running it. But it's normal procedures, right? It's not special software, is it?
No, it's not. It's not special software. You can do it sort of manually, easily, if you so wish. It sounds as though it might take a bit of time, but you know, that the cost of that is compared to other procedures in entomology is very, very low, really. Developing these models is reasonably.
Are you close to publishing this?
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. Part of an initial phase of this was published in New Zealand Plant Protection a number of years ago, but this has progressed it a little bit further.
Is there a minimum number of recommended replicates or
one? No, there's no rule of thumb. I mean, it's again, you know, you don't have the minimum number when you do an ordinary regression sometimes. You know, it just depends on how much that data captures the variability in the actual environment, I guess, and the influence on your population. Captures reality, I guess, as well as the